Jesus tells us that, quote, unless our righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees, we will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Then Paul tells us that where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. Now, we are able to surpass the righteousness of those who merely comply with the law because we are freed by the Spirit of the Lord to live our lives within the law as Christ came to fulfill it. That is, in His Spirit, we recognize the will of the Father. By grace, we are able to cooperate with His will, growing in holiness. And therefore, the law becomes a sign for us, a structure through which we see the fullness of the truth. In Christ Jesus, the law becomes an icon through which we meet the glory of God. And here the veil of mere compliance, of just following the rules, is removed, and the ends of the law rise to the surface. We are able to be made righteous, made perfect, made, in the end, God. Paul goes on to tell us, all of us, gazing with unveiled face on the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from glory to glory. Now, Jesus tells us that our righteousness must surpass that of the scribes and Pharisees. What is righteousness? It is the state of being in right relationship with God, being as holy as is humanly possible in cooperation with God's grace. The Old Covenant is clear about this. To be righteous is to comply with the law, dietary law, temple law. If strict compliance with the law were our only measure of what counts as righteous, well, we're in trouble. The scribes and the Pharisees had the law down pat, and Jesus knew this. But Jesus isn't talking about mere compliance with the law. He came to fulfill the law. That is, He came to complete the law, to perfect it, and to perfect it for us now so that we might surpass the righteousness of the most observant scribe or Pharisee. By showing us the ends of the law, the eternal purposes of the law, He shows us a way to righteousness through and beyond the law, but never around it. Okay, all that sounds good, but thank goodness for Jesus and His good example. So let's look at it again. You shall not kill. A good prohibition. But is the only purpose of this law to make killing a crime? In one sense, yes. Obviously, killing's bad, and killing is a crime. But why is killing a crime? Just because God says so? Jesus fully teases out the implications of this law. It is self-righteous anger that leads to killing. It is a certain disposition of the spirit that moves you to murder, moves you to treat another person as if he or she is worthy of death for making you angry. Certainly the act of killing kills charity in the heart, mortal sin. But Jesus' point seems to be, wait, the act of murder starts long before the knife slides in or the gun goes off. Therefore, the end of the law against killing is to habituate us to respect the dignity of the person as a creature of God, His image and likeness. Though murder may be the most violent act we can commit against human dignity, it is far from the only violence we are capable of. And we delude ourselves and one another when we assume that by merely refraining from killing, we are respecting the dignity of the person. Jesus concludes His discourse on the purposes of the law by urging us to get right with one another before we sacrifice at the altar. We give ourselves here. We are the gift. Given life by God through Christ, we give our lives back to Him in service. The goats and the lambs for the temple altar were unblemished. And so the offerings we bring, our hearts and our minds, must be unblemished as well. No self-righteousness, no pride, no envy, no deceit. If you will be transformed into the perfect image of Christ, You will accept the freedom that the ends of the law offers. There you will find the Spirit of the Lord waiting for you with mercy and love.